This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. An agreement in the Senate today revived the prospects of the controversial immigration bill. We'll have more on that in a moment. And amid this sometimes bitter debate about the border, our main focus this hour is on legal immigration. What's the process like? Who's eligible? And why? It's not easy to get that treasured green card that symbolizes the status of permanent resident. This immigration system is complicated, time-consuming, and in some cases costly. According to some legal experts and immigration advocates, that's precisely why so many decide to bypass the system. And while there may not be much agreement on what to do about those who are here illegally, most agree that a system that keeps millions of people waiting years to gain legal status while allowing millions of others to enter the country illegally isn't working very well. Later in the program, the results of a British inquiry into the terrorist attacks in London last July and a political trade-off that may give the District of Columbia a vote in the House of Representatives for the first time. But first, immigration. NPR's Jennifer Ludden joins us here in Studio 3A. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi there.
And let's begin with the Senate. It looked as if this immigration bill was stalled. Who gave what to whom and why?
Basically, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist said to the Democrats, if we actually pass something in the Senate and we sit down in a conference committee to work out our differences with the House legislation, that is enforcement only, we'll let you have a pretty big say. He said that if there's a committee to work this out, 14 seats will go to Republicans, 12 will go to Democrats. This is something he didn't have to do. On other issues, the Republicans have sort of said what's what and that's that. In return for that, apparently we don't have any limitation on the number of amendments that the senators can now bring up. Minority Leader Harry Reid had really wanted to limit this. He worried that enforcement, people who worry most about border security and enforcement would undermine the broad legalization proposals that are in the bill now, largely supported by the Democrats. And he wanted to keep that from happening. But apparently there's, as Frist has said, considerable number of amendments that are now going to be brought up.
Mm-hmm. And this has been a very divisive issue, particularly in the Republican Party.
Very divisive. There are Republicans on both sides of this issue, heated debates, and this is something that Frist has had to negotiate within the party as well as with the Democrats.
And it's a little too early for hats in the air. As you said, this bill has yet to pass in the United States Senate. We're going to hear an awful lot of amendments, which some Democrats will regard as killer amendments. And then even if the Senate passes this bill by Memorial Day, which the majority leader says is his deadline or is his hope here, then you've got to go into this reconciliation process with the House of Representatives, who will have a very different package.
They're pretty far apart. The House in December passed an enforcement-only bill. It's on stricter border security, toughens verification of employees for businesses, no guest worker program there. The Democrats are very adamant that they're all for border security as well, but they want a legalization of the estimated 11 to 12 million undocumented workers here now, and they want a program to bring in about 400,000 more every year. And that's what they're going to be trying to keep in there through this process.
All right. Well, obviously, we'll await further developments on the process in the first in the Senate. And then if it gets to a reconciliation, what happens with that? But Jennifer Ludden, she's been reporting on immigration all this week on All Things Considered. So we're going to ask her to stay with us here in the studio as we focus on the process of becoming a lawful permanent resident of the United States. Who's eligible? How long does it take? How much does it cost? If you have questions about the process, if a family member has gone through the process, or if you're going through it now, give us a phone call. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is talk@npr.org. And joining us now on the phone, joining us now here in the studio is Crystal Williams, Deputy Director for Programs at the American Immigration Lawyers Association, which is based here in Washington, also with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Neil. Nice to be here.
You practiced immigration law for more than 10 years, so you have a lot of experience dealing with the issue of legal immigration. How difficult is it?
It is extremely difficult. There are people who have the notion that all you have to do to become a citizen, much less a permanent resident, is to go down to the post office and sign up. Nothing could be further from the truth. The process for becoming a permanent resident is lengthy and it's difficult and requires some thresholds, some eligibility, which a great many people simply do not have.
Mm-hmm. Who is eligible, first and foremost?
Well, the legal immigration system is built on three tiers, three paths to legal status, for the most part. One is the humanitarian path. If you have a well-founded fear of persecution in your home country, you can request and obtain asylum here in the United States if you meet other criteria. The second path is the family-based path. If you have a close relative, and I do mean close relative, who is a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident, then that relative can apply for you on your behalf, and you can obtain permanent residence through that path. The third path is through employer sponsorship. If you have a skill that is hard to find in the United States or is in shortage, then an employer can sponsor you for permanent residence. All of these categories, except the asylum one, have a cap, a quota, a limit, so that only a certain number can obtain permanent residence through per year, and there's a tremendous backlog in the numbers that actually can.
An overall cap for even rocket scientists, but in addition to that, doesn't each country have a cap as well?
Yes, no more than 7% of any category can go to nationals of any one country in a given year.
Well, let's hear an example of someone who did maneuver this process successfully. Joining us now on the phone with his own story of coming to the United States is Roberto Vargas. He's an inventory and distribution supervisor at American Apparel, a garment factory in Los Angeles. He came to the United States from Mexico. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi.
And when did you first come to the United States?
When did I first come to the United States?
Mm-hmm.
It was 1999.
And was that, did you come first legally or illegally?
I came first here illegally.
And did you try to come legally first?
I did not try, no, I did not try.
So you just came across the border?
Yes.
And what made you decide then to try to become a legal resident?
I decided because I wanted to, you know, travel, wanted to go places that, you know, I wanted to be free to like enjoy this country, you know, to go places where, like, you, when you're illegal, you cannot just go and travel, like, you want to go back to your country, visit your family.
Mm-hmm.
That's what make me, you know,
mm-hmm.
that I want to be legal here.
And this this difficult process that we've been hearing about from Crystal Williams, I assume you had to fill out an awful lot of paperwork.
Yes, I had to.
And did you have to go back to Mexico to apply to come back into the United States?
No, I did not, no.
So you did it all in this country?
All in this country.
And there was a medical exam as well?
Yes, it was a medical exam as well, too.
And in the midst of this, there was, as you're close to getting, was there a fine or any punishment for coming in illegally?
Yes, I got a fine for coming illegal to this country.
And how much was that?
It was $1,000 for that.
And any other requirements that you were asked to fulfill?
Like no criminal record.
You've obviously also taken English classes.
When I came from Mexico, I have some English classes, but then I had to take, for me to speak, I have to take some English classes here too.
Uh-huh. And in the middle of all this, as I understand it, you then got married to an American citizen.
Yes, I got married to an American citizen too.
So this was actually, you were following two paths at that point, and I guess the path of marrying an American citizen was quicker.
That was quicker, yeah.
And throughout this, did you have to hire a lawyer to help you?
Yes, I have to. I had to hire a lawyer to do this process.
And was that expensive?
No, it wasn't that. It wasn't expensive at all. It was like.
And I wonder, do you know of a lot of other people who came here illegally who are now trying to do the same thing you did?
I don't think that many people are trying to do the same thing that I did because it's not like I think the process is like you have to be you have to be in this country around 2000. On the year 2000, and then you had to have like a process, a process with the immigration already, because you just cannot get married and then have be permanent resident. Because I applied by American Apparel too on 2000 and year 2000.
Mm-hmm. And are you now since you're now married to an American citizen, are you planning to become an American citizen yourself?
Yeah, yes, I'm planning to.
Roberto Vargas, good luck with that.
Okay.
Roberto Vargas spoke with us from Los Angeles, where he now works as an inventory and distribution supervisor at a garment factory called American Apparel. And Crystal Williams, his story, how typical is that?
It's extremely typical. There was a provision in law that doesn't exist anymore that enabled people who had been here out of status to go through the process if they were otherwise eligible and obtain permanent residence as long as they started the process before April 30th, 2001. And it sounds like that's the process that he went through. Having an employer sponsor you will happen sometimes. Marrying a U.S. citizen, face it, that's the easiest and best way to get permanent residence in the United States.
So that movie Green Card has a lot of truth to it.
Well, not a lot.
Well, most of them, I guess, don't look like Gerard Depardieu. But anyway, Jennifer Ludden, what number of people who come into this country are like Roberto Vargas in terms of, isn't the family, the familiar relationship, isn't that by far the largest number of immigrants who come to this country?
About 2/3 every year are allowed permanent visas because they have a relative here. About 16% are employment-based. They've got an employer sponsoring them. And nearly a million people every year overall are granted permanent visas, which then can let them become citizens.
And just a few seconds before we have to go to a break, but how difficult is it for an employer to tell the Immigration Service, we absolutely need this person?
Well, if they're in a high skills category, they have to be certified by the Labor Department. It's a very long process. They have to search for Americans first. They have to prove to the Labor Department they can't find someone who's qualified. Then they go through months and months and months, sometimes years of paperwork. If you're low skilled, it's a very tiny number, 5,000 every year, who can get visas for low skill work, and that's very hard, long backlog.
All right. Stay with us, both of you, when we come back. Your phone calls about the legal immigration process, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is talk@npr.org. We'll be back after the break. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The debate over illegal immigration often obscures the fact that every year nearly a million people come to this country legally. Today, the process of legal immigration. Our guest is Jennifer Ludden, NPR correspondent, who's been covering this issue. And also with us, Crystal Williams, Deputy Director for Programs at the American Immigration Lawyers Association. They're both with us here in the studio. If you'd like to join us, our phone number is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. And let's talk to Amit. Amit is calling from Irvine, California. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Yeah, you're definitely pronouncing it right. Hi, everyone. It's very nice to join you today.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So I wanted to talk about some of the problems faced by legal immigration. And, I was pleasantly surprised that somebody like Roberto actually called in because I'm actually one of the people who got in legally into this country. I came in here originally as a student, and, I went through the garden path of immigration. I applied legally. I went through the labor process, which someone just explained takes a very long time, and my employer sponsored me. And finally, two to three years later, when my labor got approved, I got into the actual immigration process. But I have been waiting for a total of nearly 5 to 6 years in the process. And when you see people like Roberto come in and get into the process and add to the backlog, which is already huge, you sit back and wonder, whether there is any distinguishing reason in this system to separate legal and illegal immigration.
I wonder if we could get a response from that, Crystal.
Well, to a great extent, it's not separated. About 2/3 of the people who obtain permanent residence in the United States every year do something called adjustment of status, which I'm willing to bet is a concept you're familiar with at this point. And those people frequently either are had the good fortune to qualify to come here legally on a non-immigrant visa, like your student visa, like the H-1B you may have obtained after your student visa, and are eligible and therefore can go through the process maintaining legality. For those with less education, fewer skills, but who are working in essential industries in this country, there simply isn't that option. There is no legal path to get here quickly. The only legal path to get here is through the labor certification process, through the unskilled category, which, as Jennifer mentioned previously, has a limit of $5,000 a year. And that includes their families. So the actual limit on the workers is closer to $2,000 a year. The backlog on that, if you look at the whole system and the number of applications that are in the system now, is probably somewhere between 20 and 40 years. So if somebody can sidestep that and they legitimately marry a U.S. citizen, they obtain the skills as you did to get here legally, then they've got a faster process. But the problem is, with our legal process, is that it's slow. The processing is slow. The quotas make it even slower.
Slow, I think, is another concept that Amit is probably familiar with. Where are you in the process now?
I have been in the last stage of the process for the last year and a half, and there is no guarantee how long it's going to take because, you know, there are a number of strings attached to that. For instance, I don't know when my FBI name check is going to clear, which is a completely separate agency and can take up to 3 years to complete FBI name check, and nobody talks about that. And currently, you know, with the visa numbers backlogged way back in April, around March or April 2001, which is about the time when a lot of illegals got legalized, I don't know how long it's going to take. You know, could be a few years. I have no idea.
The FBI process, Jennifer?
Well, actually, what struck me in reporting about this recently is the, just as Ahmed said, the uncertainty, the incredible uncertainty. The system has this Kafkaesque quality. There's a visa bulletin put out by the State Department every year that says, if you applied on this date, here's the estimated time when such and such part of the process is going to be done. And every month, you know, you have people desperately logging on. But the problem is, there's so many moving parts to the system that you can't really accurately predict how long it takes. And so they kind of watch this, and you could have 7 months to go, but it takes 2 years to get there. And last year there was this attempt to reduce the backlog that actually made the time go backwards. So suddenly people were thinking they were almost there, and boom, their wait became 5 or 7 years longer.
Having been through this process, I mean, does the word fairness apply, do you think?
You know, thinking constructively about this whole process, I would say that there has to be some kind of delineation between the path taken by legal immigrants who are skilled immigrants coming to this country and the rest of the people. And the reason for that is that in order to make America competitive and in order to get over the whole outsourcing problem that America is facing today, you need to separate the skilled immigrants and give them priority in the legal immigration process. Because if you don't, then, you know, you have countries like Australia, New Zealand, and UK, which have opened their doors and are much fairer in terms of their immigration system.
Amit, thanks very much, and good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Gudrun. Gudrun is with us from Benton, Kentucky.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I have a little experience about this. I just made my citizenship this last November.
Congratulations.
Being married to my American husband for 45 years. We had so many obstacles thrown in our way. I come from Germany originally. That's where I met him. And it seems like every state has a different has different rules and regulations. Because of that, I missed out make my citizenship much earlier. There were some people that got to make it on special dispensation if their husbands were in the army and had overseas orders. I was never granted.
I'm afraid we're losing your phone there, Gudrun.
I'm sorry.
I apologize.
So, well, it cuts out, and that's just too bad. But I've had very much trouble, and I was a legal citizen, legal resident of this country for over 30 years. Some of the time we were out of the country, but we've had a lot of trouble.
Crystal Williams put up her finger when you said some of the time we were out of the country. How does that figure in, Crystal?
One of the traps of our immigration system is the rules about maintaining your permanent residence and maintaining continuity of your residence. If you break your continuity of residence, you frequently have to start over. And there's a continuity both with respect to being in the United States overall and being in a specific state of the United States at any given time. And it sounds to me like you got caught in those very traps by your international travel.
Well, Gudrun, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. And again, congratulations for finally seeing your way through this, what may have seemed like an endless process. Anyway, I think she's still on the line. But anyway, let's see if we can talk now with Costas. Costas with us from Washington, D.C.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
And also, thank you very much for really bringing up this important issue of legal immigration, because for some reason we tend to hear only about illegal immigrants.
Well, thank Jennifer Ludden for that, who's been reporting on it all week. But anyway, go ahead.
Thank you very much. And I also wanted to mention that, you know, in my case, for example, I've been a legal immigrant because I arrived in this country in 97 and working basically for the government here. And then I started the process of acquiring the green card, which took me from 99 all the way to 2005. And basically I was here with an O-1 visa as a scientist, and I still believe that the process is extremely lengthy. I cannot really see any justification for the amount of time it took.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I really believe that, for example, having to wait now another 5 years to get the U.S. citizen is also a burden, and not to mention, of course, that you cannot even get a security clearance to work for in a profession like in my field. And that's really a big problem for somebody, you know, looking, trying to establish himself and get a good work in the field he's working.
Costas, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it, and we'll ask about your situation. But, again, congratulations. You finally made your way through the process?
Yes, indeed. I've got my green card last year.
Okay, congratulations. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you for taking my call.
And, Crystal, I wanted to ask you... There have to be rules. Congress sets up the legislation. The government interprets it. But it sounds as if, you know, this is a system that went, to pre-kindergarten at the Department of Motor Vehicles. I mean, this sounds insane.
The rules are insane. They're a patchwork. They started 40-some years ago as something reasonable, rational, consistent. But over the years... There's been this problem here, so we fix it with this patch. There's this problem here, so we fix it with this patch. And in the meantime, what we've got is a whole quilt of patches that don't necessarily fit in together. We also have several different agencies in this picture, all of which are underfunded, all of which are overworked, and none of which are really able to deliver the services they ought to be delivering in a timely way. And that exacerbates the whole problem. That makes it worse.
Jennifer Ludden, this is also an intensely political issue. People care very much about who gets into this country and how and why. I assume that Congress is responsible for some of these patches.
Oh, Congress can let anyone in. I mean, I think there's even probably Crystal Finn legislation for one person.
Yes, there has.
And, you know, as someone else pointed out to me, you know, it's people that you're dealing with here. So you really can't have a system that makes complete sense, because every single person presents its own exception.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to touch on something that some of the callers mentioned. I think their frustration at the length of time, you know, you may think, oh, you're here working already, so what's another 5 years? But what you're looking at largely is a lot of young people, you know, a lot of high-tech workers, not all of them, but many of them, they are cutting edge. They come to the U.S. because they see the U.S. is on the cutting edge of such and such technology, and they want to make their mark and be out there. But as long as they're in the process to get the green card, they are frozen. They cannot change jobs, cannot get a substantial pay raise or have a substantial change in duties. And some of the young people I spoke with worry that they're losing this whole edge that is their reason for being in the United States, and which they see as very important for keeping the U.S. competitive in a global market that's getting more competitive.
And as Costas mentioned, some of these areas of high technology are indeed sensitive in terms of security clearance. And if you're not a citizen, you have a lot of problems with security clearance.
Right.
All right. We're talking with Jennifer Ludden, NPR reporter who covers immigration issues, and with Crystal Williams, Deputy Director for Programs at the American Immigration Lawyers Association here in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And one thing I don't understand, this was in Roberto's story as well, if you come here illegally, either coming across the Mexican border or overstaying a tourist visa or something like that, can you then apply for legal status? Don't you have to go back home first?
Oh, it's a big fat depends. There's a lot of different factors that govern whether you can apply here or whether you have to go home. If you marry a U.S. citizen and you did not sneak over the border, in other words, you came in through an inspection point, then even if you are undocumented, you can still adjust status, obtain permanent residence here. If you started the process prior to April 30th, 2001, you probably can adjust status here
probably.
If you pay $1,000.
The fine that Roberta Vargas paid.
The fine that we talked about before. If you fall into some other very, very narrow exceptions, you can obtain permanent residence here. Otherwise, you can go through part of the process here, but in the end, you have to go back to your home consulate and get the immigrant visa and come back. And if you've been here illegally for more than 6 months, you have to wait 3 years before you can come back. If you've been here illegally for more than a year, you have to wait 10 years before you can come back. And to get that provision waived is very, very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm. One other question, and this is about children. Mm-hmm. If you're bringing your children into the U.S., is there a cutoff age for the kids, or does it get more difficult as they get older?
Yes, it does. If you're coming legally and bringing your children, they have to be under 21, age 21, to come with you, and they have to be unmarried.
Here's an email question we have from Peter in Lanesboro, Minnesota. I'm a returned Peace Corps volunteer who worked in Nepal during my 2 years of service. I lived with a rural Nepali family who treated me very well. Since I've returned, the family has suffered financially. The 40-year-old son of the family has contacted me repeatedly, requesting I invite him over to the USA to work. I would like to help him. Is there any hope?
My big fat depends comes back.
Oh, no.
It depends on whether he has a skill that might be in short supply. It depends on whether he is a professional of some sort that he might be able to get something like an H-1B visa. He can't come just because he wants to and just because somebody in the United States wants him to.
Mm-hmm.
He has to fall into one of those three categories, the humanitarian asylum category, the family-based, or the employment-based.
Obviously, there's been political troubles in Nepal of late, and if he could prove that somehow he would suffer persecution at the hands of whatever government may emerge there, then he would have a better case.
He would. He would need to come, because he's in Nepal now, he would need to come through the refugee process as opposed to the asylum process. But yes, he would have a better case. It is very difficult to come mm-hmm. here as a refugee.
Okay. Is there any prospect, Jennifer, as we're talking about this immigration bill that's working its way through the United States Congress, that these kinds of procedures are going to be clarified?
Clarified, no. Eased, maybe. I mean, basically, in the Senate, legal immigration would almost double. There would be more than doubling of the number of employment-based visas handed out every year. They would take some of, the family members now kind of take up some of those quotas, and they would be exempted, so that the idea is to let in more people every year legally and thus speed up these long waiting times.
Substantially, or?
I think it would be.
I think that some of the proposals that we've seen would make tremendous inroads in the waiting times. It just remains to be seen if Congress is willing to pass it and if the House is willing to get behind it.
And let's just get perspective on the waiting times. I mean, sometimes it can be just a few years. Average, I think, 11 years maybe, sort of, for close family members. But if you're the sister or brother of someone here in the Philippines, you would have had to apply in 1983 to have them even looking at your application now.
We're going to take a short break, much shorter than that, I guarantee you. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation on legal immigration, plus giving D.C. a vote in Congress. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. First, we continue our conversation about the process of legal immigration. Our guests are Jennifer Ludden, the NPR correspondent who covers immigration, and Crystal Williams, an immigration lawyer and deputy director for programs at the American Immigration Lawyers Association. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Bob. Bob's calling from West Haven, Connecticut.
Yes. Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a very, very good friend of mine who is has his green card. However, he works for a very high-security business. He's in the airline industry,
mm-hmm.
and he's afraid of going for his citizenship because of the possible implications of that. He's a citizen of Brazil, which allows dual citizenship.
I see.
And he's afraid of going through the hurdles. And I want to know, how difficult will it be for him to actually obtain his citizenship after already having his green card for 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Does Bob's friend have a problem, Crystal?
Well, there's some things that he needs to look at to make sure that he won't have a problem. He needs to make sure that he has maintained his permanent residence all these 20 years, and unlike our other caller, has not been traveling a lot outside the United States.
He travels with the air. He's a flight attendant.
He's a flight attendant, but he's maintained his residence in the United States?
Yes, all this time.
Okay. The other thing he needs to be sure of is that his criminal record is clean.
It is.
Okay. and then to make sure that there were no problems or issues that would cast doubt on his permanent residence. In other words, that he really was eligible when he got it. There wasn't any fraud or questionability about his obtaining it.
I see.
If all those things are clean, then he should have no problems obtaining citizenship.
Are there problems or perceived problems? I mean, are we dealing with a bureaucrat who says that there might be? He married briefly in, the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
He subsequently divorced her,
mm-hmm.
and it was a few years after his application for the green card.
So he divorced her after he obtained permanent residence.
And married her after also.
I'm sorry?
The marriage and the divorce both came after he got the green card.
Okay. And then at that time, he would have gone through what's called conditional residence, which
yes.
meant that they took a relook 2 years later to make sure that things were still legitimate.
And from what I've heard from him, that was really, really traumatic.
Ah, that's what's...
So he's really afraid of doing that, but I've been urging him to become an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know,
well, we can't...
the nightmare he's going through.
I think he's going to have to, in order to make sure that he goes through the process cleanly, he does need to get his paperwork in order, in the sense of get together as much documentation as he can to show that his marriage was legitimate at the outset.
Yes.
And that will be the key for him. The rest of it is an English test and a citizenship test, which with a little studying any of us could pass.
And actually, what about that?
All the four stanzas of the national anthem.
Right. But what about that?
Better than most of us can do.
Some yeah. of us have trouble with the first one. What about that dual citizenship status? Does the United States recognize that?
Well, that's interesting. When you obtain citizenship in the United States, you renounce all other citizenships. Mm-hmm. However, other countries don't necessarily recognize that renunciation. So you can wind up with a dual citizenship if the country you're from does not recognize the renunciation.
Right. Well, he has property in Brazil where his family resides. He's basically the only person who makes enough money to own property.
Okay. Bob, thanks very much for the
Thank
phone call.
You so we,
wish,
very much.
We wish your friend good luck.
Thank you.
And one final question. This is an email from Gil or Gil, perhaps, in Jaffrey, New Hampshire. I'm a Mexican citizen who's tried to stay here through employment. I've already been labor certified once, but I was not able to transfer this labor certification to a different employer, although the job and the geographical area were very similar. I pay taxes, volunteer in my community, speak flawless English, yet I still have to rely on my employer to stay in the U.S. However, if I'd been able to legally marry, I'm gay, I would have been eligible for American citizenship 2 years ago. Can you ask your guest to comment on how the immigration system is even more unfair to gay and lesbian immigrants?
The immigration system does not recognize gay and lesbian immigrants. And in this political atmosphere, I don't see that changing anytime soon. Unfortunately, it is very unfair to gay and lesbians. But again, I don't see it changing soon.
Right. Crystal Williams, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Crystal Williams, Deputy Director for Programs at the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and our thanks as well to Jennifer Ludden, NPR's reporter who covers immigration issues. Both of them were with us here in Studio 3A. Jennifer, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
When we come back, Britain's parliamentary report on last July's terrorist bombings.